I'm Jeannie Allen, and this is Reality Check.
Reality Check with Jeannie Allen is produced by National Review and is one of more than a dozen podcasts offered on the National Review online website. If you'd like a free subscription to the podcast so that you never miss a program, simply sign up at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or TuneIn. And now, here's Jeannie Allen.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Reality Check. I'm Jeannie Allen, and I hope you will join me in welcoming Fernando Zulieta, president of Academica, which is a major league company dealing and working with schools around the country and helping thousands of children get an education they need and deserve. Fernando also happens to be one of CER's silver honorees at our upcoming 25th anniversary celebration at the end of October in Miami. Welcome, Fernando, and welcome to Reality Check.
Thank you, Jeannie. It's great to be here with you.
Well, it's so great to have you on with us. There is so much happening today in the education hemisphere, if you will. So let's start a discussion about that. First and foremost, you have a lot to be proud of, my friend. Over the past 15 years, you and your brother Ignacio have built an incredible organization that runs, what, more than 60 schools in Florida alone?
Yeah, I think it's probably closer to 100 in Florida at this point.
And
then close to 200 nationally.
200 nationally, that is so impressive. Talk to us about the work. Let me start, because I really would love to really help our listeners who are diverse and broad and are all over the country know about you. Where did all this start? How did your passion for education begin?
I've been working for quite a number of years developing communities. Large new home communities throughout Florida. And one of the persistent problems that I kept encountering in doing so was that the school systems were having a very difficult time keeping up with the enormous growth that the state was undergoing. And so back in 1996, Florida passed its first charter school law. And at that point, I saw the opportunity to offer and create better communities, build better communities for folks. And I was working primarily with starter home communities where, you know, young families were buying their first home. Mm-hmm. And looking to build a future. And unfortunately, the one thing we had no control over was the quality of the schools that they had nearby when they moved into these communities.
Amazing.
So I started one of the first charter schools at the time in the state of Florida called Somerset. And that began my journey in education. So I was overwhelmed by the demand for that first little school that I helped start. And the very first school principal that I hired and found for that school, Dr. Ruth Jacoby, mm-hmm. is still with the Somerset Network today in charge as head of education. 21 years later.
Amazing.
And the very, very first teacher we ever hired, Shanine Sadesky, is still with the Somerset Network, having started as a teacher, become a principal there, and has had a long and successful career as part of Somerset.
Which has grown to
60 schools now. So it's a national network at this point.
So Somerset itself has 60 schools. And something you just said, and you know, whether it's Ruth or the teacher you mentioned, you started with the word community and that you saw the need for a school in the communities. And we've talked a lot, you know, I've had just the pleasure and privilege of talking to a lot of people, as you have, and on this show I've had a number of people whose themes, it doesn't matter whether they're psychologists talking about how students learn, or ed tech experts talking about how we deliver schooling, but almost everyone comes back to this word community because it's something that we're lacking in a really bad way in so many places in this country. The more kind of disintegrated these communities have become, the more separated we've become, that more and more our kids in particular, our families, our people need a place to go where they feel like this is part of their world. This is a place that's going to help them evolve. And so it sounds like you've also built that community among your network if you have people remaining part of it. Talk to us a little bit about, have you seen that change in Miami and other places where your students and your professionals have come together and helped build communities?
Yes, time and time again. That's what I was at the time when I first became involved with the charter school movement. It was because before that, I was building communities, building, you know, new home communities, which is a common thing that happens throughout Florida, where many new families were moving, relocating from other parts of the country and other parts of the hemisphere, even, looking to build and start a new home, a new family. And I felt, you know, you needed to do this holistically. And it wasn't just building a house, but actually building an entire neighborhood. And one of the key elements of doing that was offering a great educational opportunity for these new families. And the charter school movement, at least I saw early on, had the potential for changing how we approached community building in America, and doing so where we could serve entire families. And a lot of that, those same early, you know, kind of ideas that I had in starting first the Somerset Network and then later the Matter Academy Network. And then, believe it or not, that's after that is when I started Academica, because that's when I realized that it was very difficult to scale and grow these school networks without some support mechanism.
Right.
And I created Academica, and in order to help these budding education organizations develop. And in each one of these instances, what was most necessary was creating an environment where people, professionals, educational professionals, could feel supported and collaborate with their own peers and with families to build real learning communities. So one of the things we always tried to do was to serve entire families. Mm-hmm. And in innovating how we would design school models to do that. So we were some of the first charter school support organizations in Florida who actively went and established not just elementary schools, not just middle schools, but entire K-12 systems that could serve entire families. That way, mom and dad wouldn't have to worry about, you know, dropping off one child at an elementary school and a different, you know, and another one at a middle school somewhere else. And yet another one in a high school in another location.
I know, because so many people and so many families have to do that on a regular basis. It's ridiculous.
Right. It's disruptive.
Yes.
And it also, part of what we were trying to make sure is that the learning community could engage with the family and work with them for many years. A child's entire K-12 trajectory. So Somerset has quite a number of these full K-12 campuses. And in that environment, you become a part of that family. The parents, you know, are part of the learning community. The children grow up within that family, the Somerset family, for example, where in fact I have three daughters that attend Somerset now. And we at Academica, all the members of our organization, we really believe in the schools we've helped grow. Mm-hmm. And we have our own families, our own children attending the schools that we helped create.
Which is amazing. And you also, so I'm just going to brag on Fernando Zulieta for a moment to our listeners, the president of Academica, the founder of these extraordinary networks. Here you are, you're a trained attorney, you were in real estate, you're on the boards of several local, state, and national organizations. Like, you don't have to be doing this, but every time I talk to you, Fernando, or go to see one of your schools, it's amazing. This is so much of your focus, and to try to create more and more opportunities for not just the students, but you did this amazing thing that I'd love you to talk about, where you actually have this early college program, and so some of your high school students are then also getting college credit with Doral College. And then I want to talk about how you're training some of your own students to become teachers, as you were just saying, and come back again. So start with the big picture college piece. Why that? Like, so an innovative school, clearly not the traditional options were cutting it for kids, and now the higher ed connection. What are you doing? How can we learn from that?
Well, the impetus for that was the same ideas that drove making sure that we had truly a seamless K through 12 system that we could offer every family. And I was struck, you know, and have been time and time again by the disconnect that existed between the K-12 system and higher ed. And I know in Florida, the state wanted to tackle that and re-engineer their entire educational system to try to make it a seamless K-20 system. And there's been a lot of pushback on that over the years, but it's the right mentality. And we wanted to do that as well with the organizations we worked with. So about 12 years ago, I started looking into what it would take to offer a more robust college level opportunity for our students that were in high school. And we were already collaborating with local colleges to offer dual enrollment wherever possible.
Sure.
But that has a lot of limitations. The colleges themselves couldn't, you know, they were limited in how many courses they could go and offer right at one of our high schools. And often the students would have to leave the campus they were familiar with to go do some courses at the local college. And that's disruptive.
Yeah,
as well.
And it causes attrition.
Exactly. So, you know, especially since a majority, and I'd say, you know, like 60-some% of the students we work with, mm-hmm, are from lower income families.
Right.
So that the greatest cost that a lower income student has in accessing higher ed isn't the tuition, it's the opportunity cost. So I realized that a lot of the coursework we do in high school is actually redundant to the work that gets done then in the early years of college. And I thought, man, what a wasted opportunity to force lower income kids to go into these college programs where they're repeating a lot of the work they've already done in high school.
Right, especially a good high school.
It's at a higher level, but it's not necessarily different.
And maybe not maybe not as relevant.
No. So I, you know, what we looked at was, what can we do to accelerate that for these kids? And eventually I just moved ahead with helping establish a college program, which just was recently accredited and now is fully accredited nationally. And it was Doral College.
Mm-hmm.
We've had, I don't know if it's 4 years already of graduating classes or five, but it's, we have students now graduating with a great amount of college credit, many of them with associate's degrees already.
While they're still in high school. Like, basically, as they finish high school, they get the associate's too, right?
Right. And it's all free.
All free.
College, we did this with the networks that we work with, collaborated. They came together, and said, and became the founders of the college. And they support the college to make sure that the learning opportunity for the students is entirely free and does not impose any kind of financial burden on them. So you hear this talk about wanting to bring free college out there. Well, we've been doing it for years, and it's through this type of program that it really works. If you think about it, going, you know, a lot of, and I would ask people, because, you know, I enjoyed college. I loved it, but I could tell, I always ask people, well, what, tell me the one class you took in college that your brain was unprepared to wrap itself around while you were in high school. And there are very few. There are some, right, but there are very few classes that at least I took in college. And I studied business, I studied accounting, I passed the CPA exam, and then I went on to law school. And I can tell you that for the most part, just about every class I took in college, and I took classes, you know, in industrial engineering and other areas just because I thought they were interesting.
Right.
And but the information that I learned, I could have understood at least while I was in high school.
Right. And the other thing you're also raising is this sort of issue of relevance. I had, you know, if you haven't met her or the folks at Strata Education Network, I had Carol D'Amico on the show, and they have done some phenomenal work with Gallup survey work. Over 100,000 people they've surveyed, and it's ongoing. They're constantly trying to understand attitudes toward higher education, because higher education is in great need of the exact same kind of transformation that you and others have helped push in K-12. And, you know, one of the things they keep coming back to is relevance. You have students who, exactly as you said, they acknowledge that they could be doing more in high school. They acknowledge that part of the limitation, part of the reason we have so many non-completers is they get to college and it's not connected. Either they're repeating stuff they have already done, it's not relevant to where they want to be going, it's not as rigorous, there's not as much diversity of choices. And so to begin to help the high school student understand a direct path by taking those courses and by seeing what's available, what you're doing is you're helping, and your institutions are helping reduce the amount of default and failure and non-completion, because we know it's important to complete and finish. And no matter what path you decide to go on, whether it's a four-year, whether it's technical, whether it's 3 degrees after that, and yet so much of the time our higher ed system has just not kept up with the changes in technology, the changes in how fast these kids are growing up.
No, and I totally agree with you. The concept of relevance is critical. We I know Judy Marty, one of our school leaders and network leaders, she's a highly accomplished principal. That was one of the big things she did in the Matter Network, and built an amazing high school and middle school there. And it's all rigor, relevance, and relationships. Mm-hmm. That was her three R's. And she really, you know, right there in the city of Hialeah, Hialeah Gardens in Miami, created an amazing school community, and did that with predominantly low-income students. Mm-hmm. And now that city, which is fascinating, if you go online and you see a website by, that was a study done by Digital Education, and I don't know, it was the Walton Foundation, but they tried to identified America's 100 largest cities and those that had the smallest education gap, mm-hmm, among the rich and the poor. And they found that the number one city in the nation was Hialeah. They identified the top 10 schools that were eliminating that gap. 7 of the top 10 were Matter Academy schools, which is the network we work with and helped establish.
Which is amazing, because I remember hearing about Hialeah 20 years ago, and it was awful. It was written up as being, as schools failing, crime rates, am I right?
Yeah, yeah. And now 20 years later, it leads the nation with the smallest gap in education between the rich and poor, and the schools that did that drove that revolution were the Matter Academy schools. 7 out of the top 10, like I said, 8 out of the top 10 were charter schools. 7 of those were Matter Academy.
Were your schools. And, you know, this is just what drives me crazy, because we say all the time, coming back to the theme of community, If you fix the schools, you'll fix the community. And so many people are like, no, we have to focus on after school. We have to focus on poverty first. You have to focus on all these other side issues. No, this is yet another example. We've seen it, of course, here in Washington, D.C., where I know you've been working. We've seen it so many places around the country. Miami, your backyard, where you started a lot of this, of course, highlighted is not too far. Another example. I mean, relevance. I love this. Rigor, relevance, and relationships. Everybody out there should commit that to paper and brain whenever you're thinking of anything. You created the SLAM Academy, the SLAM Charter School. Talk about a connection between all three. Talk a little bit about what SLAM does.
Yeah, and SLAM actually collaborates, is part of, or, you know, affiliated with the Matter Academy Network as well. And when we created SLAM, we put it right in the inner city in Miami, downtown, near downtown Miami. And we did that with Pitbull, who's an artist, a pop music artist, who's a close friend, and I helped mentor him. We met because he would visit all of the inner city schools we were working with when he was just an up and coming artist, and he would speak, he did it on his own time, so that he could talk to the kids and stress to them how important it was for them to stay in school and get a good education.
Amazing.
And we became friends, and we said, look, why don't we work on a school project together? And we came up with this sports leadership arts management concept, and launched it about 6-8 years ago. And the first one was in downtown Miami. It's really flourishing, doing great. The kids love it, and it's about the world. Part of it is about the world of sports. But it's not, it was trying to create this, the notion of relevance and relationships between, so students would, with rigor, with a not an easy curriculum, but a challenging one, they would learn about things like algebra with teachers who loved sports and who would find ways of imbuing the curriculum with the relevant sports analogies
and metaphors. Exactly.
So then when they're calculating a trajectory of a ball that a basketball player is trying to score, to shoot over into from a 3-point line, they're actually doing so using the mathematical equations that are at play, and or when they're doing sports averages, score averages, when they're trying to rank teams, they're learning that stuff that they didn't realize required, you know, mathematical competencies.
It's science.
And we're even looking now, we're working on esports as well to make it that much more relevant, so that they realize that the world of sports, which is also includes sports medicine, sports marketing, fitness and nutrition, all of those elements that go into a thriving world of sports, which kids love, by the way, are all connected, and they're all part of their curriculum.
Well, I remember meeting, when I had the pleasure to visit a couple years ago, I remember meeting a couple of the students. One was already working, already knew, and I think she may have only been a sophomore, maybe a junior. She already knew that she wanted to go into sports physical therapy. I remember meeting somebody else who wanted to be in marketing. And that they shared with me how project based it was, which again goes to the heart of what it is that is what's so critical and usually only or most available in flexible, personalized learning environments is this notion that you can still get and achieve some of the required core courses and some of the stuff that we all might have thought was pretty rote, but in the context of a project, in the context of a pursuit, not because suddenly kids today have to have a project to be relevant and we didn't. We actually, most of us who learned anything great, will trace it back to a great teacher. And this is the same thing. We may have the teacher, we also may just have the ability to create our own and have that flexibility. And so I remember hearing them talk about what they were doing and how they were learning it and just thinking, wow, if we could do this in all the schools out there that are only 20 and 30% proficient in reading, writing, math, everything else, which folks is most of them, sadly, we could fix this. And it shouldn't be only available to what charter schools are in 6% are really available to 6% of our population at this point. It's just staggering that we can't learn more quickly from what's going on out there. So why is that? We have things like SLAM, we have your 200 schools, we have the schools of some of your colleagues who are also part of our movement and that we're celebrating with in Miami in October, J.C. Heising at NHA, John Hage, Charter Schools USA, lots of mom and pop, individualized schools, private schools, public charter, some great innovative traditional public schools. But again, there's still such a small number of them, and charters have really led the way almost as their beta test. Why are these challenges still facing charter schools, Fernando?
I think... You get into the world of, unfortunately, the world of politics at that point, and then that's the adult world, unfortunately, the one that has nothing to do with education, which is where there are pre-existing interests that feels threatened by this type of innovation. Which it shouldn't, because ultimately, if we focus on getting the best outcomes for the students, everybody wins, because society as a whole wins. And you can call them, people spend too much time and energy on labels. They want to label things. They want to label, oh, that's a charter versus a public, a public school or a traditional public school, or that's a nonprofit or a for-profit. And ultimately, what's behind, those are just completely abstract and useless labels. It's like, it's not even like the cover of a book. I say you shouldn't, don't judge a book by its cover.
Right.
Yep. You judge entire organizations by labels, artificial labels we affix to them. And rather than worry about the goal, which is actually to increase literacy and help as many families as possible get out of poverty by getting educated. And honestly, that's at the core of everything we do. I truly believe that the ticket out of poverty is an education. We know that.
Yeah.
And that's pretty easy to define. So it's the way I look at it. It's how can we help our society, how can we help our city and our nation? And the best way I can think of it, and you said that earlier, which was, fix the school, you fix everything else.
Well, and you're talking about having created so many, in a positive way. This is something Clayton Christensen used, people talk about all the time. It's a disruptive technology. Charters and other forms of, and forget charter schools are just the vehicle, as you said, that's just a label. But having innovations available to disrupt the status quo, to disrupt the way things have been, is typically what's necessary to make change. I was thinking about, Elon Musk is in the news a lot lately, and everyone, there's all these articles written about, oh, he was going to do SpaceX and that didn't work, and he's going to try something else and that didn't work. But you know what? Everyone's standing in line for a Tesla. Right. So
absolutely.
they want what he's created. They want that disruption. They want to do something that they believe is responsible for the environment. And yet they want to spend time maligning these crazy ideas. Well, usually that's the pioneers. They take the arrows. They come up with the great stuff. And eventually it does turn into the mainstream. Do you think we're far from these kinds of disruptive innovations being mainstream?
Not at all. And I can see examples. Well, and the one thing you don't have to worry, you don't need, is credit. Just as long as the innovations continue to happen, I'm all with it. And when we started 20 years ago, the system was atomized into, for example, the elementary, middle, and high school model. And you had that time and time again happening at the school districts. And one of the things we did early on was we got rid of that. We said, that's like I was saying earlier, let's go for these K-8, K-12, K-12s and even K-16, which is what we're doing now. And the districts have rapidly moved away from that old K-5, you know, 6, 8, 9, 12 model, and we see more and more K-8s and 6-12s even at the school districts. And I think that's them adopting some of the innovation that the charters were able to demonstrate worked. And that's just a small part of it. But we've done that programmatically. We've seen the districts, you know, come and replicate programs that we pioneered. And that's wonderful. I think that's smart. That's what they need to do. Mm-hmm. And honestly, when I see that school districts do something smart, we adopt it. The point isn't that I don't view them as competitors. I view them as colleagues, we're all in this trying to see what works best for the children that we're serving. Yes. And we need to, as I forget the old, like, where was it created or invented, but rather, does it work? And if it works, use it.
And that's exactly right. And one of the reasons I love having you on the show, people like yourself, is it demonstrates that being an entrepreneur and applying those entrepreneurial activities and that spirit to such a critical enterprise as education can be game-changing and life-changing, not just for the students and families involved, but for the economy, which, of course, what this is all about, is allowing for economic prosperity, freedom, and happiness in the exact way our founders intended it and the way that is sought out by millions and countless of people who have come here, including yourself, over the years. So hats off to you. I love highlighting this kind of work, Fernando, and love the fact that we're able to hear from you, that you were so generous to take the time with us today, and that you're allowing us to honor you this year, because you and your team, on behalf of your team, really deserve it. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Jeannie. And it's great, and looking forward to seeing you again soon, and hopefully keep making a difference.
Absolutely. My guest on Reality Check in this edition has been Fernando Zuleta, CEO of Academica and pioneer in helping pave the way for innovations for learners at all levels. Please join me again next week on Reality Check for more information about Academica, Fernando, and the efforts underway in his organization. Please go to edreform.com, where you'll find everything you need to be in touch, to follow him, and hopefully to copy him. This is Jeannie Allen. Thanks again.
Reality Check is a weekly podcast produced by National Review and posted on Monday at nationalreview.com. If you like what you heard in this podcast, and I hope you did, you might want to subscribe for free and make sure you don't miss any future programs. You can subscribe at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn. And you can also find much more about education reform, opportunity, and innovation at the Center for Education Reform's website, edreform.com. Don't forget, tune in to Reality Check every week.